Welcome to Onc Live On Air. I'm your host today, Ashling Wehner. In today's episode, we have the pleasure of speaking with Anne Chang, MD, PhD, and Stephen Liu, MD, about the FDA approval of lurbinectedin plus atezolizumab, or atezolizumab and hyaluronidase, as maintenance treatment for adult patients with extensive stage small cell lung cancer whose disease has not progressed after frontline induction therapy with atezolizumab or atezolizumab and hyaluronidase, carboplatin, and etoposide. In our exclusive interview, Drs. Chang and Liu discussed the significance of this approval, key efficacy and safety data from the pivotal Phase 3 IMforte trial, and how the addition of this regimen in the extensive stage small cell lung cancer treatment paradigm may affect clinical practice.
So the IMforte study was a Phase 3 study that really looked at the benefit of adding lurbinectedin to the maintenance phase in the treatment of extensive stage small cell lung cancer. And I think it's an important advance for our patients and really should be considered as a new standard of care. In this study, patients received standard carboplatin, etoposide, and atezolizumab induction for 4 cycles. And after induction, if patients did not have signs of progression and still had a good performance status, still had good hematologic parameters, they were then randomized to standard immunotherapy maintenance alone, which would be atezolizumab, or atezolizumab plus lurbinectedin, given the dose of 3.2 mg per meter squared with primary prophylaxis using pegylated G-CSF.
So the IMforte trial design was basically taking patients who had not been pretreated, they are extensive stage patients. It did not include patients with brain mets, and the patients had a good performance status of 0 to 1. And about 660 patients. So went into induction, they got carbo, etoposide, and atezolizumab for 4 cycles. And then they underwent a second screening. And at that time, if they had ongoing response or stable disease, and that they still had good performance status of 0 to 1, they were able to be randomized to lurbinectedin plus atezolizumab versus atezolizumab alone. So this is a maintenance strategy. At that time, the patients were treated until progression of disease or if there was toxicity. This trial did not allow crossover. And the primary endpoints were PFS and OS. There were about 480 patients who went on to the second screening. So that's important because that meant that almost 25% either did not have a response or stable disease, or they didn't have the performance status, hadn't recovered enough to go on to the maintenance. It was a dual endpoint. So the investigator reported PFS from, and again, this is the time of randomization into the trial. So they're starting the maintenance at that time. That PFS, the hazard ratio was 0.54 with a median PFS in the lurbi-atezo arm of 5.4 months versus 2.1 months. And then for the OS, that was a hazard ratio of 0.73 with median OS of 13 months versus 10.6 months. So positive trial in both of the endpoints, very exciting for our patients.
And what we saw was adding lurbinectedin to that maintenance phase did improve outcomes. We saw an increase in response rate. We also saw an improvement in progression-free survival, and I think a substantial improvement in PFS. At 6 months, patients who were progression-free, it's about 19% with atezo. We pushed that to 41%. With atezo plus lurbinectedin. So we're significantly increasing the number of patients that remain progression-free. That PFS hazard ratio, I think, a pretty impressive 0.54. But I think the most important part here, when we're adding an active drug like lurbinectedin, we expect to see an increase in response. We expect to see an improvement in PFS. We expect that to come at the cost of toxicity. The real question, would that translate to people living longer? Would that lead to a survival benefit? Or would it only be a transient temporary benefit? And importantly, adding lurbinectedin to the maintenance setting did improve overall survival. The median survival here, 10.6 months with atezo, compared to 13.2 with atezo lurbi. Remember, that doesn't include the 3.2 months patients were receiving induction therapy on average. And so if you're thinking of overall numbers and those seem low, remember that's not counting 3.2 months of induction therapy. The survival hazard ratio, probably a little more meaningful here, OS hazard ratio with lurbinectedin and maintenance, 0.73. It's the same hazard ratio we saw with Adriatic, with Caspian, about the same hazard ratio as 133. clearly a mark for a significant improvement in outcomes. So an improvement in both progression-free survival and, importantly, overall survival for patients.
This is a tolerable regimen. The toxicities, we know, they're a little bit overlapping. So you have cytotoxic chemotherapy, kinds of toxicities, myelosuppression, things we know about lurbinectin already. You have to watch the LFT elevations. You can have some GI upset. And then you have side effects of atezolizumab. Obviously, that's part of the control arm as well. Overall, very well tolerated. I do think it's important to note that, you know, some patients don't make it, about 25% attrition from start of induction therapy, but overall, very well tolerated.
We think of safety concerns with lurbinectin, and we're adding an active agent. So while it does improve PFS and that translates to an improvement in survival, it also is going to add toxicity. And I think it's important to sort of understand what that toxicity is. We think of general toxicities. We think of things like nausea, fatigue, things that we see with chemotherapy. Those tend to be low grade and can be often treated or prevented with proper prophylaxis. Some of the toxicities are more lab abnormalities, such as anemia, decreased platelets, decreased neutrophils. It's important that we consider primary prophylaxis with pegylated G-CSF. That was part of the study. And while we can see decreased neutrophil counts, the rate of febrile neutropenia was quite low, 1.7%. The word tolerability is difficult to define because it really isn't the eye of specific patients. But I think a decent surrogate here is how often do we see patients discontinue any therapy, any part of this regimen due to adverse event? And in this IMforte study, we saw that number was very low, 6.2%. 6.2% had to stop some part of treatment due to toxicity. Others were able to continue treatment, did not stop for that reason. So reasons for tolerability, as discussed, myelosuppression, fatigue, nausea. Most of those toxicities tend to be low grade or paper. And overall, I think the regimen is pretty well tolerated.
It's an exciting trial for our patients. Basically, if I have a patient who is fit, has tolerated induction chemotherapy well, does not have brain mets. Again, this is a situation where the patients, that was part of eligibility. And so, again, it would be patients without brain mets. I would really think about adding it or have the conversation with them about adding lurbinectin into atezolizumab. You know, I think there's been a lot of talk. Is this basically starting cytotoxic chemotherapy for second-line treatment earlier on? Could we hold off? For some patients, I think for some patients who are really beat up by the induction chemotherapy, I think it's fine to sort of say, okay, let's take the time for you to heal and go on maintenance immunotherapy.
So for patients who complete carbo-topotezo, no signs of progression, at that point, I think it's appropriate to consider maintenance lurbinectin with atezolizumab to really improve outcomes for our patients. Part of the reason why we see that benefit is because of significant attrition with small cell lung cancer, that even though we have very effective second line and beyond options like tarlatamab, I think a very important advance there, remember that about half, maybe more than half of our patients never receive second line therapy because when the cancer progresses, often it leaves patients too ill or sometimes the act of progression itself is fatal. And so patients often never get an opportunity to get any second line therapy, which is why being proactive, giving maintenance therapy before that event of progression can really benefit patients and give them more time. At the time of progression, standard second line rules apply in this setting. I think tarlatamab in the second line setting is very appropriate. So my standard algorithm for patients would be carboplatin, topotecan, atezolizumab, 4 cycles. If no progression, lurbinectin plus atezolizumab maintenance. At the first signs of progression, tarlatamab second line, or of course, whenever options, a clinical trial.
Our patients we know do extremely well with chemotherapy and immunotherapy up front. Some of those patients right now have long-term survival. So, you know, at 5 or 6 years, and we really need to extend that to more of the patients. That's the unmet need. I think lurbinectin is a way to increase your overall survival, but we do need to recognize that there's a lot of ongoing trials right now. They're really exciting agents. And the thought and the hope, you know, is to be able to really make a difference in that tail of the curve. I do think that, you know, clinical trial for me is still the way to go for my patients. So if there's a patient who I want to put on a really exciting clinical trial, I will definitely talk to them about that, whether or not we want to hold off on the lurbinectedin, put them on trial. I would have equipoise in doing that. But for patients who are really doing well, and again, want to do the most that they can do to prevent this disease from coming back, definitely having discussions about lurbinectedin now in my clinic. And we did hear about the tarlatamab trial phase 1b from Dr. Paulson at World Lung, that potentially there's a very nice benefit from adding tarlatamab in the maintenance setting. We're waiting for the results of the larger phase 3 study. I have a new trial that's come out that's through the cooperative groups. That's the S2409 PRISM trial. And that's really the first trial to look at integrating precision medicine around the subtypes. So basically getting patients, figuring out what their subtypes are and seeing whether or not we can randomize to the biomarker-directed treatment, the targeted treatment, plus immune therapy versus immune therapy. And there are other trials that are ongoing. So I think this is a really important and exciting space to watch for our patients. I think we'll be able to make some real progress in the next years coming in our, not only in our understanding, but in outcomes for small cell patients.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive On Air. Check back throughout the week for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On X and Blue Sky, follow us at OncLive. On Facebook, like us at OncLive, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you're there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.